I'm Ian Dallimore, and this is Digital Enduring.
Everyone became a content creator.
Elvis almost killed you.
Once you're not at home, you've really made it.
All right, welcome back, guys. My next guest, he's a buddy of mine. Most of you in the industry know him very well, but hopefully we'll get a couple of stories out of him. He was actually a hell of a hoopster at Adelphi University up in New York, but he played overseas, and his claim to fame is he roommate was Dwayne Wade. And I had him down here in South Louisiana for an LSU football game, and my cat Elvis almost killed him. So we got a great story there. And we've had a lot of great adventures together. And more importantly, I've enjoyed growing alongside of him in his career. And I've been highly impressed with our next guest, who is the president of Omnet, Ryan Lull. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, man. This is exciting.
Yeah. You know, when I put together the podcast, the idea, you were the first person that I wanted to get on, but I didn't know if you would be on. So I had to kind of put you towards the back half of the first season. So I greatly appreciate your presence, Mr. Lull.
No, of course. Thank you. I'm looking forward to this. It's exciting. Yeah. This is, I think, my first podcast. You sound wonderful to that microphone, man. This is great.
Thanks, man. I practice a lot, and I spent a lot of money on this mic. We do have a wide variety of listeners. We have people that are in the out-of-home industry, but we also have people that are outside. Actually, a lot of people that live in your world now. So maybe give our listeners a quick run through your career, more of a high level. I know when you and I first met each other, and it maybe sound like I'm fanboying with you, but when I first met you, I was like, man, this guy is so cool. But you started a company within PosterScope called Hyperspace. And I remember the national rep, Scott Shafranak, will give him a shout out. But I remember he bought you and Alex Kim a PlayStation for Hyperspace, and you had this really cool spot. So maybe walk our listeners really briefly through kind of your career and then where you are today.
Yeah, of course. So I actually started my career at Zenith in the out-of-home department there. I worked with some really cool people, Gary Peterson, Joel Balfita, who I still work with today at Omnicom. I had the opportunity to work on some really cool business and jump right in. I worked on accounts like Stoli and Maker's Mark, did some really cool stuff, some campaigns, won an award. And then from there, I actually moved on to Outdoor Vision before we were acquired by Aegis and became PosterScope. And spent a few years at Outdoor Vision and then PosterScope. Worked on some really cool accounts there. Did some great work with Motorola, the launch of the Razor, launch of the Sliver, launch of the Q. Worked on some cool stuff with CVS Pharmacy. It's actually where I got to work really closely with a lot of Lamar folks as CVS made some acquisitions in California and Southeast United States. So toured all over Florida and the Southeast and then the Midwest, Chicago, all the way up. So that was a really, really good experience for me, really being able to get out on the road, doing a lot of rides with clients and a lot of the local reps, which was a lot of fun. And then I did have the opportunity to launch Hyperspace inside of PosterScope, which is a standalone digital out-of-home specialist, the first of its kind in the U.S. We did have a pretty cool office at the time. A lot of our vendor friends like to come and hang out there. It was a good spot down on Broadway and 26. It was a cool little loft space. But yeah, so that was really cool. A lot of people thought I was crazy. At the time, I was feeling quite a bit, you know, between Motorola and CVS and New Balance and a couple others, working on some cool new business stuff. But I just saw where the future of this business was going. The future was digital. I saw that growth coming out and having the opportunity to do some of the very early work in digital out of home. And obviously, worked very closely with you guys at Lamar because you guys were big believers in that too, in your digital conversion of your plan. So the opportunity to do that, it just seemed to really make a lot of sense to me. And obviously that grew and grew until the time when I got recruited by Dave Culo to come over to Omnicom and really start something there and start something brand new. And that's where I was hired at Omnicom to start eTheory, which was the digital specialist group inside of Outdoor Media Group and Outdoor Media Alliance. And I had the opportunity to do some really cool work there, obviously. That's where I think things started to really take off. And that's where we're doing a lot of technology integration, not just putting stuff up on digital signs. So doing a lot of interactivity, working, got to work with a lot of different technology companies that were new in the space, just getting involved. And then obviously that grew into what we're seeing today being the biggest growth driver, and that's being programmatic, right? So, but in the early days, getting to work with, you know, friends of ours like Mikhail and Alex at Bluebyte, and working with Michael and Lucy at Vistar, and now there's a whole host of folks that were working in that space. But, you know, coming up with those guys, and I know we did a couple of CESs together and a couple of digital sign conventions in Vegas. That was a lot of fun with having that young group of of leaders in the space talking about technology, talking about digital at home, and bringing that to life at that time was really exciting. I had the opportunity when Dave left to take over and run all of Outdoor Media Group as president. I did that for a few years, which really gave me a really, really good perspective in terms of how I could work with clients at a very senior level and help them understand what their out-of-home investment truly meant in terms of the overall mix, and working with clients like Apple and Google and Warner Brothers and HBO and Disney and State Farm and Pepsi. You know, we had an unbelievable client mix. We still do to this day. And then just most recently, now my new role at Omnet, and where I oversee all of our commercial investment in the marketplace and run our principal-based buying group, I now oversee that kind of investment across all media channels, not just out of home. And what's fun about that, obviously, is now working again, still with my same clients, still get to be very heavily involved in out of home, but now working in the other media formats as well. I get to see, first and foremost, for me, it was a shock just to see how undervalued out of home was, obviously, from a cost perspective and from a value perspective. And really now working with our clients at a high level in terms of where the media dollars really are truly being spent, and out of home can play a major part of that. Obviously working very heavily in video, premium video, doing some really cool stuff in the audio space right now, but having that broader understanding of kind of how dollars are working in the space has been a really awesome learning experience for me. And obviously having to do it all through kind of the recovery of COVID and all of that, you know, really challenging, but again, super fulfilling for me from a learning experience.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we've talked about this with quite a few guests on our podcast, is you've become a bit of a visionary person. And obviously through creating D-Theory and Hyperspace and throughout your career, you've had a lot of, I would say, a lot of mentorships that you've given. You know, if I could call out a few people like Jill Schnitt, Alex Kim, Chrissy Radigan, and probably so many other people. And I think that's one of the things that has really made you successful in my eyes as a friend, and also just watching your career grow, is it's not about Ryan Lall and Ryan Lall getting to the top. It's you've always surrounded yourself with core people. And you had mentioned the kind of fun that we would always have. And I think that's one of the unique things that we used to do, is we would have a core group of us, and we were from all facets. We had a young startup. We had the Blue Bites. We had John Laramie at AdStruck. But we would always bring in different people to kind of come hang out. And we would talk about the industry. We would talk about how to advance the industry and the career. And I think it has a lot to do with your personality and who you are as a person. Maybe touch on that, you know, both your work ethic and kind of why you've became successful at what you do. And I know it's tough for you to kind of be braggadocious, but I'm asking you a question to be braggadocious about yourself.
No, yeah, listen, I appreciate that. And I think that from our perspective, certainly yours and mine, I think we both agree that we've been very fortunate to work in a business where there's quite a bit of crossover with friends, right? And close friends. You know, and Mikhail and hang out with John and you and Michael, everyone when we were first coming up, you know, and trying to really change this industry from just being sticks in the ground to doing something that's a lot more compelling for advertisers, right? To get away from being this kind of like lesser looked at media format from a spend perspective. But for me, in terms of, and I take that as a compliment, obviously, and having, you know, worked with good people, you're only as good as your team is, right? And surrounding yourself with really smart people, really driven people, is the only really true way to become successful. And I've had been very fortunate and lucky to have great people around me. I think one thing that I do is I really just look to empower people. I don't micromanage at all. A lot of people that work with me are, you know, they understand my management style. I come in and I talk at a very high level, and I'm very client first. I've always been very client first, and I think that's critical. And I think from an agency perspective and being the agency side my whole life, I'm also very, very vendor or supplier first. I am very creative in our deal making. I understand that for this to be a really healthy business, everybody has to win, right? So I think my willingness to want to be very close to all parties, clients, agency folks, and our supply partners, and it's kind of creating, interweaving almost like friendships throughout all those segments, is really kind of what my management style has been. And yeah, I couldn't really think of it any other way. I mean, most of my close friends, you know, are tied to the business in some way at this point. Funny, my wife jokes about it all the time. She goes, yeah, you're lucky. You're at a work meeting or you're at a work dinner, but you're also with five of your best friends. So it's like, say it must be nice for you. And I say, well, frankly, I don't know if I'd had the time to do anything else. So I either have friends that I work with, or I don't have time to do anything else. So
Yeah, and your wife really can't complain because she works in the TV production business, movie business. So
she does some fun stuff for sure.
So as in your new role at Omnet, so that's a division within Omnicom. What I love is that you're an industry expert, you're a thought leader in the out-of-home space and have been for quite some time. And now your role is really taking the overall scheme of a media mix modeling and starting to really help educate and see how out-of-home plays a role, but also other media types within it. How do you tactically go about that process? You're not just pushing out-of-home into the mix, but...
No, not at all. Yeah. No, in fact, the real elevator pitch for Omnet and why we started Omnet was really in response to conversations we were having with our clients, and we wanted to be better partners for them. And what we saw a couple of years back was, you know, clients were changing the way they were spending, right? They weren't spending so much long-term. They weren't making longer-term commitments, which would then afford them lower rates or more flexibility, right? Because you're making a little longer-term guaranteed commitment. They were changing. They needed to be on the fly. Obviously, a lot more of their spend was going digital. They needed to be more nimble. Their spend and their campaign times were really being truncated. So they didn't want to make longer commitments. They wanted to make short commitments. They wanted more flexibility. So we said, look, we'll invest Omnicom capital in the marketplace. We have a really good understanding of where we tend to spend historically and with partners. So if you guys don't want to make that longer commitment, but you still want all those benefits, you want the pricing benefit, you want the flexibility, we're happy to be a better partner for you, and we'll invest our own capital. And we'll go and make deals with partners that will allow us to do greater discounting and provide you that same flexibility over the short term, you know, and all the same benefits that you would typically have if you invested over the long term. So that's really the elevator pitch to that. And clients really have responded well to it. They understand that, one, we're willing to put our own skin in the game. We're taking risk on some of these investments that we're making in the marketplace. And they're ultimately benefiting, yeah, right? Omnet's a great savings lever inside of Omnicom. It's a great way to mitigate inflation costs, you know, which we're seeing a ton of right now in the marketplace across a lot of different channels. So our willingness to go and make deals and make investments to offset these rising rates or to provide anything else in terms of cash savings is obviously a big benefit. And it's obviously high on the list of most pitches that are happening right now. It's like, how much would you guarantee us in savings? And let's talk about that. We have a product that helps us to help you with that, with any kind of savings you need to deliver to your procurement department or whoever that a client might have. And that's what we're doing with Omnet. It's just really exciting.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a couple of things. The portfolio that you represent in the Omnicom portfolio, it's the best of the best. You got Apple, you got Pepsi, Google, Audi, Warner, Disney, Nissan, just to kind of name a few. What's kind of the reaction with those brands? You know, we've seen Apple and Google and Pepsi really dive in and embrace out of home. What is the reaction when you start to talk about the omnichannel approach with those clients and the importance of out of home?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure if an omnichannel approach is really at the center of all those conversations. You know, if you take an Apple, for example, they historically have just been really passionate about out of home. You know, going back to Steve Jobs, who used to say it was like his public art gallery, right? And he'd go out and have a lot of pride in the out of home locations, which is why they have arguably the greatest portfolios in the world, certainly here in the US in terms of high impact stuff. You know, Google looks at it, I think, in two ways. They've looked at it, tried to look in through the same lens that Apple has, ensuring it being big and impactful. And then I think they also take a data-driven approach in terms of saying, where do I have Android users? Where are we going to be exposed? So if you're doing something like YouTube, it almost becomes more of an entertainment place. And then obviously a Pepsi that has always gone so heavily into Super Bowl, but then we also have local distributors that have a huge demand for messaging in their local markets. It's like, it really does run the gamut, which is really cool. So we don't really talk about, I would say, I don't talk about overall media mix, but what I do now that I see where they're investing their dollars more closely and I'm making investments on their behalf, it's certainly easier to have conversations with clients and saying, look, you're way over invested in this channel. And what are we really trying to do? So I think it's something that I had some of those conversations when I was running Outdoor Media Group with certain clients that were very heavily invested in out-of-home. I think what I have the opportunity to do now is work with clients, certainly more of our performance-based clients, and help them understand that they probably haven't been invested, if not invested at all, in out-of-home in the past. I kind of can help them see and help them understand their mix a little bit better. Certainly can talk about out-of-home, but my goal is to make sure that they have the healthiest mix possible for whatever they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and especially, you know, a lot of us on the publisher side, both in the online and out-of-home space, you look at that pie chart, you look at the spend that is spent. It's for obvious reasons, you have heavy spend in online, mobile, and a lot of that has to do with measurement. Because I truly feel a lot of the brands we talk with, it's just a lack of education. So sometimes it's probably you walk into this meeting and it's just like, hey, did you know you can overlay the same data that you're utilizing in the online space, maybe in a different way, but hey, this is why you should shift some of the funds over here, because you're going to be able to hit that consumer more often and more impactful than you maybe thought you could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I see too is like at a home itself, particularly if you're investing in like bigger markets like New York and LA and things like that, where a lot of our spend goes based on our client mix, at home is actually not cheap if you stack it up aside other like things that, that clients are buying, right? For the cost of a, you know, board on Sunset, you can do a lot on Instagram. You can do a lot. You can do a lot on Twitter. Or you can do a lot in search or things like that. So I think that sometimes the out-of-home industry loses sight of that, like especially if you're buying premium stuff. But there's no replacement, and there's nothing out there that can have the impact and like the real-world impact and the real-world feel of a really good out-of-home campaign. Really good outdoor, especially it's matched with really good creative. And I think there's really no substitute for it. And the way that it can complement what any client is doing in premium video or do anything doing online, certainly anything they're doing with mobile, needs to continue to be talked about. And the education has to be there. That's absolutely true. I think, honestly, a lot of times, too, clients get intimidated by out-of-home. Do they have the right creative? They know they're going to be out in the public domain. Do they have the right creative? Is it simple? Is it going to pop? Is it going to be really, really noticeable? And I think a lot of times they're intimidated by the amount of investment it might be for, like, one board on Sunset Strip or one board in Times Square, or, you know, do I have enough brand chops to have 5,000 digital Lamar boards lit up at one time? Maybe, maybe not. You know, that can be an intimidating proposition for a brand, you know, and obviously we're out there talking about, yeah, you should absolutely be doing that. There's no way to have reach and scale and do things that you can do at home. And I think a big part of what's being missed too, there's always like this inherent for brands, like once you're an out-of-home, you've really made it. You know, it's why you see a lot of brands jumping in right now after they do their performance mix. What can they do? You know, where do they want to go next? They want brand chains in New York City. They're buying billboards. And then obviously what they're doing in social is a great story being told,
right?
But it's an intimidating one, right? So going back to your point, education is certainly key. And I think the out-of-home industry itself, and a lot of the specialists that are in the business have been specialists for a long time, and a little bit of an echo chamber. So where's a lot of at-home people talking to at-home people being like, we're not getting our fair share. We're not getting our fair share. And this, you know, there's no reason why. Why is a certain brand buying so much on YouTube? There's a really good reason why they buy a lot on YouTube, especially if they're buying something on like cost per completed view. It's premium, but they know a lot of people watch. You know, so it's like, you know, the at-home industry, you know, unfortunately, I still think has a little bit of a chip on its shoulder in terms of like, why not us? Why not us? It's like, and it's certainly, you know, if we wanted to talk about data or measurement or things like that, that's a whole other subject. But it's like, it's not about why it's not you. It's like, you got to really understand. And it is obviously a brand by brand conversation. But when you're talking to clients, you have to really help them understand. Maybe they're not ready for out of home, or maybe they are. You just really have to work with them closely and show that it can be, it's not one or the other, certainly. Yeah. It's how does it all work together as a healthy mix?
Yeah, and Anna Bagger and I talked about that the other day. It's, you have to understand the why behind out of home. And if you're gonna have a bit of a chip on your shoulder, which, you know, you can, that's fine. But you need to understand what the brand's KPIs are, but also help guide the brand. I think one of the points, Ryan, that you just made is imperative, and it's a great opportunity for us. It is scary, and it's very easy for someone like a Coors Light just to run a Coors Light campaign across the entire US for their MLS sponsorship, as opposed to going in and saying like, hey, let's talk about this. Why are you buying MLS markets, or why are you buying non-MLS markets? And how can we take this creative and make it more hyper-targeted or hyper-local to the community? And these are actions that they're doing in their YouTube B-rolls, in their buying Instagram. But if we're not educating them on the creative side, because I would argue every sale should start with a creative idea and out of home, because in essence, that's what makes out of home great, is the massive size of it. But more importantly, the ability to take a blank canvas. You and I have spoken about that. Take a blank canvas, make it a part of the community. And, you know, I just got back from New York a couple of weeks ago, and I loved walking around Brooklyn, and you see all these different wallscape companies, and those ads talk to that community. And you can resonate and you can relate. Now, if you took those same ads and brought them down here to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, it'd make no sense whatsoever. So I think you make a great point there. The creative side of it and the opportunity on the creative side is key.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this goes back. I mean, creative ideas have sold in way more billboard campaigns than any fancy talk that I've ever sit out in a conference room. I can guarantee you that. And it goes back to my early days at Zenith. I remember doing meetings in conjunction, the media with Makers Mark Creative Agency at the time, Doe Anderson. And they had this idea for, you know, executive billboards, kind of like a Bremer shape type thing, and we were side by side. And I just remember that day so vividly in my mind. And we were just kind of like spitballing all these crazy ideas. They want to like trip wax off of all the, you know, New York City water towers, or you get this tanker truck and create a prop that we're filling a Maker's Mark volunteer. And we pulled most of this stuff off. And Gary Peterson and I remember it and won a bunch of awards. It was so cool. We did this LED pour in Times Square. And the client was just like so engaged. And like, you get the right creative idea, you find it hard pressed to find a client to say no to a really good outdoor campaign to creatives, right? I'll double down on that. Say, I've yet to ever have a client that I've been on a ride with in a car to show them actually outdoor in the real world, like an out-of-home safari.
I've yet to have a client
not buy outdoor, or if not buy more when you're on a ride with them in a car. So, and the problem is now it's like we have too much, and this is what we have to be careful with the rise of programmatic and automation and platform buying for out-of-home. We certainly want audience level buying, and that's stuff that we've been going after for a long time, and that's truly going to shift the scales. It's going to tip the scales in terms of spending out of home for sure. The issue is you don't want it to become robotic, and you don't want the art part of out of home and the impact part of out of home to get lost in a platform somewhere. So it's going to really have to be a healthy balance, you know, and that's a big challenge, I think, for the out of home specialist community, is to manage how much automation versus how much like real world impact they're selling into their clients in terms of what an out-of-home can deliver.
And I'll kind of use one of my examples, and it may be upsetting to some people if they represent this brand, but I thought the biggest misstep was Chick-fil-A when they removed the cows from the billboards.
Totally. I mean, it's great.
You know, I know it was time, but to your point, like when you take someone on a out-of-home safari, which I'm going to steal that term, you need to capture that person's attention. And I tell you what, I know whenever our local sales managers would do market rides or AEs, not only are they pointing out great locations and great creative, and they're like, oh, I want to be there, but they're also pointing out like really shitty creative too. So I think our point to make sure that we educate that side. The other point that I wanted to make, or the point that you made that I thought was great, was the two-way connection. I think oftentimes we lose sight, some people in the out-of-home space lose sight to the fact that it should never just be an out-of-home campaign. It needs to be an out-of-home campaign that's coupled with a YouTube ad, that's coupled with a mobile ad, that's coupled with a, you know, TV, CTV ad. So it needs to be a piece, and it becomes a conduit where the out-of-home drives engagement in social, or social then drives engagement in out-of-home. Maybe touch on that, or maybe a handful of clients that where you've had that experience.
Yeah, for sure. And that's so key right now. Like, one of our clients, Oatly, just did some awesome work. They continue to do awesome work. I love, they're such a fun client to work with. And they're doing some really cool stuff with their creative. Like, they're taking like the murals you explained in Brooklyn, some of the painted murals, and they're layering it in a really like cheeky, funny way in terms of like what's being like the murals in their Instagram feed. And then there's a video of their Instagram feed of the mural, and they're doing like this layering approach. And then they're bringing it back to another YouTube video. And it's like, oh, now you're actually in the creative meeting of where this concept was first born. So really cool stuff, and kind of like layering, you know, the different formats and having a lot of fun with it. You know, I look at, you know, coming out of like Pepsi and the Frito-Lay stuff, some of our Doritos creative has been awesome. We just did some cool stuff for Pure Leaf. We're actually going to feature at our ad club at a home event in New York in a few weeks. Like, I remember coming out of the Black Lives Matter movement, that work, Doritos went to a number of really cool artists to do murals and gave them the full canvas, like you say, to come up with some really interesting work during that time. And obviously a lot of these cities were going through a lot of, you know, social unrest, and it was a really hard time for people in these cities, well, for the country, honestly. But Doritos, you know, gave them the keys to the car and said, do whatever you want. They came with some really interesting creative, whether they used Doritos in it or branding in it or not, and it was totally up to them. We did something similar around mental health awareness with Pure Leaf and a poet, which will feature again at that event in a few weeks. That's the stuff that I think is really compelling now. And I think that's the stuff that other brands see that and they get super excited by it. They're saying, you know, this is the new connection right now. This is the connection, not only out of home to brands, but it's out of home to communities. And I think coming out of the pandemic, certainly out of home has played a role in being a connection point for not only brands in the communities, or giving ways for brands to give back, or brands to support communities, but also for communities to talk with each other. And because I'm like, look, we know out of home units, billboards, posters, street furniture, they're beacons in these communities. and they can be very powerful with the right messaging. So I think that's one awesome byproduct coming out of the pandemic, where we're going to see, I think, brands doing really cool stuff that's working with communities. But I also think we're going to see communities and artists and poets, you know, using out of home in conjunction as a two-way connection and messaging either back to brands or back to the communities or back to something that's happening in society or in their own community. And that's bringing in together, like, that's really, really enhancing the core power of out of home and what it was historically, like being such a being part of the fabric of, you know, of a local community. So I think that's super, super cool. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that with brands. And obviously the story that can be told after that out of home launches, whether on a social channel or in video or whatever that, you know, whatever happens beyond that, that makes it very sticky and it makes it very compelling to tell that story and use that out of home creative or that out of home messaging in a number of different ways across a number of different formats.
Dude, this everything you just said is why I've always wanted to have you on this podcast. And we're gonna make sure that we have a lot of these campaigns that you're talking about in the show notes, because I think you're right. You know, the communities, we owe it. And I know at Lamar, you know, we have very core communities that we're not only just rolling out billboards, but we're very respectful to the community. And as I've spent a lot of time recently back and forth in Austin with my daughter, and then yesterday in Baton Rouge, I was driving down in downtown, and obviously in Austin, I've seen a ton of this, but you see these murals that are built. The place that I brought you to, Po' Boy Lloyd's in downtown Baton Rouge,
sure.
They all of a sudden had a local artist, and he's got these crab claws, and just like in Austin where you stand in between the wings, and I'm sure every city has it, but that's a moment, and it has this great little expression there, and it's got a hashtag, of course, and you stand there, you take a photo, and that's a part of the community, and it... Sure, it may promote people to go to Po' Boy Lloyd, but it's more about how do you take the community, take a message, and inspire people correctly. And I think brands have to be careful, right? Because we're very cautious of that with a lot of alcohol brands. You have to be careful about, because you, just as you have positive messages that you may, you know, put out into the world, you don't have that problem with mobile and social, because you're hitting such a target audience. In the out-of-home space, you have to be careful, because that message also could be skewed the wrong way and affect communities as well. So I think we owe it to ourselves, I think both on the agency side and on the publisher side, to be cautious of what is put out there, which again shows why out-of-home is so powerful.
No, absolutely. And that's, it's a great selling point for out-of-home, certainly. But like, again, it goes back to my point, kind of the Spider-Man adage, like, right, with great power comes great responsibility. Yeah. And, you know, but getting back to about, you know, out-of-home could be, certainly now can be, the lightning rod in the community, and it can be intimidating for some brands. There's a lot of brands that sat on the sidelines, and rightfully so. You know, if you don't have the right message, you don't have the right message. Yeah. So, but I think it is something we can build on, and I hope we do. So I think that's the real power of out of home in kind of integrating, getting really, really powerful with the creative and bringing in artists and poets, like I said, and have a community message live on and perpetuate is something that is, I think, should be extremely exciting. You know, it makes out of home a much more purpose-driven media, right? And that's something that we should all be excited about.
So we talked about this at length, how we position out of home to be more complementary to brands, and then the power of creative. So let's pivot a bit. The education and the evolution of programmatic in the out of home space, it's obviously become important. You know, my 50,000 foot view at it is that it helps give brands that haven't invested in the out-of-home space the ability to feel comfortable, overlay data just as they would in other media types, and then see how it performs. And if it performs great, the best case scenario for us is now those brands see the effectiveness of out-of-home and they begin to buy traditional. Maybe talk about more into the programmatic side and talk about the wide variety of client activations that exist in the DSP, whether it's direct or programmatic or automation through the traditional side.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, this is something that is certainly going to be a massive driver for the business going forward, right? The ability to automate the out-of-home planning and buying process and what's happening with that now through certain platforms, and the ability to transact out-of-home in an automated fashion and to have either, whether it's real-time bidding scenarios or buying direct or buying versus, you know, via PMP, extremely important, because that's where, you know, I can tell you from a large holding company perspective, we want to be doing that, right? Our clients are asking for that. We want to automate. We want to be smarter. We want to be able to incorporate as much valuable data as possible And then we want to make sure that we're making the right buying decisions based on and using automation and technology and data to really impact what we're paying, right? Pricing and making sure that we're assessing the right value. So that's something that we're working very, very closely with our clients on and working hard on to establish. I think our ethos at Omnicom is we want clients to be able to activate however we need to activate. We want to have the broadest spectrum and have the most capable experts, whether they're buying direct, whether they're buying an open exchange, whether they're buying via PMP, whether they're buying, you know, whether it's sponsored, or however custom they need to buy, we need to make sure that's available to our clients and our agency partners, right? So how that happens is we make sure that we have the right structure set up. We have to make sure we have the right team set up. And we also have to understand that this is a different, you know, we have an advertiser and a client like Nissan Infinity. They buy a tremendous amount of digital advertising, a tremendous amount of video advertising. They buy a tremendous amount programmatically, much more exponentially than they buy direct out of home. If we can make out of home, the right out of home available to them programmatically, of course we want to do that. And if that helps, it makes it easier for their programmatic traders to buy media that fits their campaign needs. We absolutely want to have that be an option for them. And that's how we're growing the business. But it's certainly not a one or the other. And again, I think a lot of the out of home that we buy, a lot of the really premium impactful stuff will be continued to be bought direct. You know, I think it's in high, very high demand. There's no true value to buying really, truly impactful out of home, like one-off sites too, like spectaculars, walls and things like that, you know, via, you know, an automated fashion, right? And if there's an opportunity to do it, they do it. But I think where we find a really healthy mix and where the business really starts to see tremendous growth is we have the right experts buying the right out of home for the clients directly. And we have the right experts buying, you know, out of home in an automated programmatic fashion, whether again, it's through deal setup, you know, deal IDs or, you know, open exchange and bidding or, you know, however it needs to happen, or if it's just automated direct through, you know, an agency through supplier, that's fine. I think that's where you're going to get the audience level buys. That's where you're going to get the scale. And that's where you're going to get the more frequency of buys too, because typically the way brands buy other programmatic, in a lot of instances, they're buying off of KPIs and they're buying off specific outcomes that they're trying to achieve. So they're regularly investing, you know, in certain channels to achieve those outcomes. And I think we can get there without a home. It's going to take some time, but just in terms of being additive to a brand that is investing out of home, is maybe buying one, two or three wall sites or, you know, a brand train here, and they're looking for some brand impact. But, you know, like I said earlier, if they're launching a product, maybe it's a really good idea to light up, you know, a couple thousand digital bulletins, and how that can certainly be done in an automated fashion. It should be done in an automated fashion.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, your former company within Omnicom, OMG, the programmatic team that we work with, they do a phenomenal job of, in essence, they're setting up guardrails, right? And if you have digital buyers that maybe are very well skilled towards buying a one-to-one medium, which is mostly what they're buying, and then now today they have the opportunity to buy out of home. Mm-hmm. I think one of the great things and one of the great pivots that a lot of the out-of-home specialists, especially OMG, has done has pivoted towards, hey, we're not going to block programmatic. We're the experts in out-of-home. We're going to help guide these buyers, and we're going to do it through evergreen deals. We're going to do it through PMP, but with more of guardrails that are set into place, it prevents the ability not to buy bad inventory or even inventory that doesn't make sense and can't resonate with that consumer. And also you discussed it within Omnet, the ability to protect pricing and to set that into place. And, you know, the way that I look at it is, and I hope our listeners as well, who are buyers and sellers, it's not how does, you know, insert whatever buying shop, how do they get the best deal? It provides more stability within the industry itself, where the industry has moved from a 6 to a 12 month campaign to, hey, they're planning a week prior and then going live. By an Omnet investing media and investing more dollars and educating those brands, that's key for on the publisher side to see stability and see success and see new brands continually invest in our space. So I would encourage people to look at that as a positive.
Yeah, totally. But getting back to your earlier point, kind of what we do programmatically, and like I said, we want to open up the ability for digital traders to buy out of home in the right way. So we do need those guardrails that you mentioned. And that's the biggest part of what we do, like Jill's team, and setting up either PMP. So we know, we understand we have a firm structure of pricing, where our historical pricing and what our advantage pricing should be. But also it's really more about inventory curation, right? And making sure that a non out of home specialist isn't clicking buttons and buying some really poor inventory right? We have, like you mentioned, we have clients that invest very heavily in out of home. We start buying programmatically for them and they start ending up on really poor inventory. That's going to be a problem for us, right? So what's the point if we're automating, if we're just automating us buying burst sites more quickly at a higher price? That's not good business. So we want to make sure we're just adding a level of automation, right? And technology on top of, you know, what our true at-home experts already know, right? And having that information disseminated throughout the organization.
Yeah, for sure. And what you create, if you are allow buttons and data just to click, and we're not saying you shouldn't do that. It's having the experts help guide you on what to buy. Because in programmatic, you can quickly be far away from the client and it's a one and done. And you're like, hey, why is client X not buying out of home anymore? And you have no idea because there was no one guiding it. So I think that's huge.
Yeah. Well, open exchange buying for out of home, it can be a very dangerous place. There's a lot of bad inventory out there. So we want to make sure that you know, we're buying what we would normally buy and we're buying it faster.
So maybe help give our listeners a little bit more. During COVID, we began to see a significant uptick of digital out of home and programmatic being spent. And in my opinion, I know from Lamar's standpoint and the amount of revenue that was spent and the brands, it was smartly bought, you know, whether it was through data, et cetera. But then when COVID hit, we saw the adjustment and we began to see things like CTV and YouTube and Snap and Instagram video. Maybe talk to our listeners a little bit more on what makes video so sought after. Because if I know that and I'm educated, I can then complement it with an out-of-home pitch.
Yeah, no, there's a couple things there. So one, another byproduct of coming out of the pandemic was the biggest business in the world that emerged was content creation. So everyone became a content creator through TikTok or Instagram video or whatever, YouTube. Mm-hmm. And people are home making videos, making clips, and the amount of content that's out there is significant, right? And way for brands to kind of get involved there in a really organic way and in a true way can be extremely beneficial to their business. The part about, you know, where I see like CTV and other premium video and certain social platforms with video capabilities, it's really a supply and demand thing, right? There's not a ton of real premium supply out there for those assets. So, and it's also where you want to be. So it becomes a very highly sought after market. We all know and understand that TV is a bit of a ticking time bomb. They got a little bit of a reprieve from, you know, COVID because people were home and watching again, but we know where those numbers were trending towards and they continue to trend towards in terms of viewership is declining, right? Then the true, I guess, what people would watch on their TV in a lot of instances, you know, aren't really ad supported opportunities. So the Netflix, the Apple TVs, the HBO Maxes, even though they, you know, some of them have products now like a Hulu and a Peacock and an HBO Max, it does have some ad supported product. You know, that's good, but there isn't much of it. And there's an understanding that, and we know it, there's a little bit of common sense. It's like people are on their phones looking at Instagram, they're looking at, you know, certainly younger demos are looking at Snap and TikTok. It's an extremely limited market in terms of supply and it's highly sought after, and that's where the demand is. So that is exactly why it is the most highly sought after and the most invested in format right now. Certainly from our clients, we think there should be more of it. Actually, we think that the transfer from traditional linear TV investment over to premium video is actually been a little slower than we anticipated. And again, I think some of that came over from the holdover from COVID, but as TV ratings and numbers, you know, traditional linear starts to decline, you know, there's still going to be certain shows that always perform well and there's going to be investment there. But as that starts to decline, you know, brands have to figure out where they can invest. And I think we're also seeing a lot more sophisticated brands and a lot more nimble brands, you know, coming out of COVID and brands that are working very quickly, you know, on these platforms, whether it's Snap or TikTok or Instagram or whatever, to market themselves or to sell their own products. So of course, it's a great place for them to be spending.
Yeah, and it's if it's curated by you and me and it's curated by our kids, it seems more genuine and it doesn't seem forced. And on top of that, the behavioral side, you know, my kids, you know, they're 7 and 9. These crazy little kids will sit here and watch like some dude playing a game or opening like a new toy for hours. And I'm like, are you really watching someone? And then you see the commercials that follow and you're like, these are huge brands. So it's only going to become even more relevant. And I'll kind of give a shout out to one of the brands that embraces out of home really well is Diageo. One of the things I also saw them do during COVID, and hopefully they'll continue to do this, is, you know, Sophie Kelly, who we all know well, she launched this campaign where it was having bartenders inside of their own homes and lofts, and they're mixing drinks and they're mixologists. And it seems organic, as if it's your local pub guy or girl making a drink for you, and they're teaching you how to make a cocktail, and it's branded by Diageo, but it's not a branded by Diageo here for a specific brand. It's very organic. And so that's a great brand that proved, because they also used out of home to help promote those local sure. bar mixologists, et cetera. So maybe touch on that, like how the two can play a role together, and how do you look at that as a media mix model?
Yeah, certainly should. And I think that's a little bit of a holy grail, I think, for a lot of brands, is to how do I reach somebody on a one-to-one in a really meaningful way that doesn't seem like I'm trying to sell them something. I think that's really wonderful. And I think out of home can play an important role in terms of driving awareness to what those clients might be doing in that space, whether they're doing something on Snap or doing something on TikTok. And I think it's always so funny that, you know, a lot of the leading platforms where our clients are investing their video dollars are also some of our biggest spenders in out of home. So I think they understand that, you know, people are out and about, they're on their mobile device, they're more likely to bump into a billboard than anything else while they're engaging with their actual platform. So, and then for other brands to understand that and kind of weave that message together, I think that's pretty compelling too. And that's obviously something we've been selling to our clients for a couple of years now, and it's been pretty effective.
So just to kind of wrap up this podcast, I think, you know, you and I have spoken on a lot of panels, and one of my most favorite events is the New York Ad Club. And this year you're again the board chair, and you always do such a fantastic job. Maybe leave our listeners here who, in about 2 weeks, you guys have this amazing event called Out of Home Now, Purpose, Action, and Connection, and maybe give a little plug there.
Yeah, absolutely. December 9th, be there or be square. Super excited. I know you always come up to town for it. It's awesome. It's such a great event. Historically, so, you know, we always hold it at the end of the year. It's kind of like a great year-end wrap-up. The whole out-of-home community comes in and comes into New York for it, which is fantastic. Everyone gets to see each other before the holidays and the year-end. Obviously, last year, we had to go virtual with COVID, and there's some nice stories to tell out of that as well. We got a lot of our friends across the country and folks in the West Coast, which is fantastic. We were able to launch a series of other virtual events this year, smaller events, that kept kind of the conversation going, but we're excited. We're bringing it back. We're going to have a hybrid event. We're going to have certain events already sold out. We're going to have about 250 people in person live here in New York. We're going to also simultaneously stream the event. So our friends who've been keeping in touch with us throughout the whole year virtually will be able to also log on and register and take in the content. We're super excited about this event. We just think it's one of these cool, super pure, that's obviously Barry does a great job with the DPAA event, you know, Anna with the national conference, in which we've had to go virtual again for the last 2 years. I think it's going to be awesome to have people in person and to really just be talking about at home. I think a lot of times with like the OAAA Geopath event and DPAA, we talk a lot about kind of technology, and we talk a lot about things that are kind of on the horizon, but don't really talk about the core part of out of home. And I think sometimes we also miss talking about the creative, you know, which we've touched on a lot today. So we're super excited. We have an awesome lineup. We have, first of all, we have an unbelievable keynote speaker. Tim Armstrong is going to speak. Mm-hmm. We're going to really dive in there. He's super excited in terms of what he's doing now in the space. We're going to have Mondelez. We're going to have Pureleaf, some great clients. So, and again, we're going to have, as always, you know, we're going to have our creative panel. We're going to have our agency panel. We're going to have our technology panel. So we're super excited by the event. It's always well attended. And we're just super stoked that we're able to do it in person again this year. So.
Yeah. So my only question is, Ryan, is it going to rain or snow on this event?
Well, typically we either get a blizzard or just torrential rain, you know, downpour. So it wouldn't be an ad club, an out-of-home ad club day if we didn't have, you know, just awful weather. So, you know, we like to do that for all the people that come into town. Look, we'll figure it out. But I mean, this year it's been a little wacky, the weather up here in New York. So I'm anticipating a blizzard. So we'll see. Usually the worse the weather, the better the turnout.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody wants to get together. So we'll definitely put the link in the show notes for you guys to sign up for the virtual, since it is sold out, which is a testament to you and the team's hard work there. But it's theadvertisingclub.org. And you can find in there. But Ryan, this has been a lot of fun. I think you and I could have done another 5 hours, and we could tell stories about how Elvis almost killed you and talk about even greater stories. But look, continue.
I told you I was allergic to cats, man.
I know. God. And if you want to know, maybe we'll have you on again, or maybe we'll have a side podcast about how I almost killed Ryan, which would have been detrimental to the out-of-home industry. But hey, seriously, the time has been amazing. Thank you for being such a great friend. And, you know, you and I don't get to connect a lot, but you're one of those guys that, you know, you and I are friends for life. We have that same vision for the out-of-home industry. So I applaud you and your career and just being such a brand new great dad too. So proud of you.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. With one on the way in a month. But yo, thank you. This has been an awesome opportunity. Always excited to talk with you, Ian. Really, really thank you for inviting me on this, and I'm happy to come back anytime. Thank you.
All right, my friend. Have a great one. Digital and Dirt is brought to you by Lamar Advertising. To learn more, check out the links in the description or go to lamar.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Spotify, Apple, or other platforms where podcasts are found. Thanks for listening.